Alright. Finally, after spending four talks of looking at principles behind the evolutionary creation, we're going to try to take a run through the evolutionary creation, but it's going to be very, very sketchy. And it's going to be pretty much abstract. And we're going to call attention to principles, because if we have the principles, we can put them to use in our daily lives. And some of them are really very helpful for everyday living. And we're going to look at this primarily as it relates to human beings. It is impossible, maybe in 30 or 40 talks, to go through this in a more detailed manner and to appreciate everything along the way, but in one talk we have not much hope of accomplishing much of anything at all. So what we're going to do is going to be superficial, but not so superficial, I hope, that it doesn't stimulate interest, because in our relation to the greater cosmos is our relation to greater purpose. And so it's important to become interested in this. We're part of the creation. We can't be separated from the creation. So when we're looking at the method of the evolutionary creation, we're looking at something much more important than genealogy. We're part of our genealogy too, but not in the same way that we are of the cosmos. We'll try to begin at what is called the beginning. It would be very helpful if we could begin before the beginning and we could have an idea of the plan or of the dream in abstract before there was any manifestation of it. However, we don't have the wherewithal to do that, or at least I don't. It's beyond my capacity. It is something that others have spoken of. Madame Blavatsky hints at it in a very poetic way, and Max Seindel gives us some vague hints, but there's nothing there that's sufficient to get a grasp on it or to build from it. Now, the first period of time is called the Saturn period, because that period of time has the character of Saturn. So it behooves us to look a little bit at the character of Saturn, and we're going to be very picky, and what we're going to do is going to be very arbitrary. The planet Saturn is the planet of darkness. Exoterically, it is the planet of cold, and esoterically, it is the planet of heat. In some mythologies, it is indeed the planet of cold, as in Greek mythology. But in Norse mythology, Loki, or Loge, which is Saturn, is the planet of fire and of warmth. It is a planet that represents concentration. So at the very beginning, concentration is what takes place. The very beginning, I have the Saturn period represented here. At the Saturn revolution, I didn't put the names on all the revolutions, but at the Saturn revolution of the Saturn period, it was a beginning of a concentration. That attention is taken from the spirit in a wide sense, and it is concentrated on a certain area. Like for us, that area is very large. It's like the whole solar system, and perhaps even beyond what we consider the solar system now, but it is a concentration. And that produces a contraction. And it's a contraction that the Bible describes it as something formless. But Max Seindel, being an initiate and having seen some of the Saturn period in his first initiation, says that there is a formation that is quite clearly defined. In fact, he even describes it using words something like hard, so that the surface of what is called the Saturn globe was hard enough to produce echoes. Now that's kind of strange, since the surface of the Saturn globe was at its densest the density of a concrete thought. Now this is, we're talking about things really, really rare. So we have said that there are seven revolutions through seven globes in each of the periods. Now we have this diagram that says that in the Saturn period, the globes are located in divine spirit, life spirit, abstract thought or human spirit, and concrete thought. Now this is the only way we have of representing it that I know of in two-dimensional space, but it's terrible. It's not like the way it happened. The way everything in creation, we'll find this at every step of the way, everything in the evolutionary creation proceeds from within outward. So if you think of these globes and if you think of yourself as the universal spirit, you're drawing on something deep within your own being. It begins with divine spirit, which is the will to be. And the will to be is as subtle as we as human beings are capable of experiencing. Most people think of will as, you know, making fists and gritting your teeth. That's desire. That's not will. Will is so subtle. Will sees things into being, because divine spirit works with life spirit, and the will to be sees things into existence. All right, so we have a little bit of an idea of what's happening. These revolutions are revolutions where we start from deep within ourselves and we bring things to the surface of our consciousness and then go back in. And we do that for 3.5 times. We get further and further outward in our consciousness, further and further materialized, and then we turn back in, and the next 3.5 evolutions are more inward and interning. There are four realms in which the globes are located. I'm using the word realm rather than the word world, because there are only three worlds. There's divine spirit, life spirit, and the world of thought, but it's divided between abstract thought and concrete thought. There are only two periods. For those of you who are familiar with this and that are buffs on it, only the Saturn period, the Vulcan period, and the Earth period are periods that use three worlds and four realms. All right. Most of us don't think all of the time. And for most of us, we're not even aware of the will to live in our own being. We're just not aware of it. We are, in many ways, as much as we think we are awake, we are deeply unconscious. And that will to live, the will to be, is something very, very subtle. Some people know it by its effects. A doctor can tell you that two people having an illness, one might look very robust and look like they can come through anything, but they die. There may be another person completely scrawny, like you think they would die at any minute, and they live through something that somebody else couldn't do. And it is because that will to exist, that will to go forward in its own quiet way, is stronger or more manifest in that person, more awakened. Oh boy, it's going to be tough. I have really dense notes here. Now, the cosmos is described as being dark and warm. The darkness and warmth are difficult for me to understand. It presents me with an enigma that maybe some of you have gotten insight into, but I don't. When we think now of these worlds, like especially life spirit, it is a world that we think of dazzling light. So if this period was dark, that's sort of an enigma. What does it mean? I'm not trying to say that I know everything in giving these talks. I'm going to tell you all along the way the things that are problematic to me. Now, I can think of two possible answers, and there may be more, and they both make some sense to me. And the first is that the universal spirit is awakening with the cosmos, and that it sleeps between creative manifestations, and that what is happening is that the universal spirit is itself coming out of a deep sleep. In some ways, that makes sense, but in other ways, it does not, because there are all of these divine beings that are intentionally working on us and other creators right from the beginning. So it doesn't quite make sense. The other answer is that it is dark because to our perception we were not awake and aware. It tells us very clearly in the cosmic conception that before we entered into the evolutionary creation, we were in a blissful kind of all consciousness that was not self-conscious, and it was not objectively conscious, and it wasn't even like a waking consciousness, but it was a glorious, blissful kind of consciousness. And then we were immersed into what became the cosmos. And that relative to that, it was dark. And for even at this point, even though we don't have anything like a waking consciousness, there had to be something that what was to become us was aware of the great change. And that if we look from that perspective, even when we look in the memory of nature, as we as human beings participated, it looks dark. Now, I don't know if that's the answer. That's a possible answer, just as the first is a possible answer. I don't have any preference. The second seems a little bit more logical to me. I'm willing to believe that there might be something else, some other reason. To begin with, we, or what has become us, when we speak now from our waking self-consciousness, we're speaking from the spirit. And we're speaking through a focus of self, but we are speaking from the spirit. So our experience of being awake now is not the same as being only in a focus. We were foci in cosmic root substance. And cosmic root substance is described exactly as mathematical space is described to mathematicians. It's a space where there's only position. And any locus in that mathematical space has only position. It doesn't have any size. Because if it has any size, then it is defined beyond being a locus. And so all of the potential points or the loci in cosmic root substance are continuous and contiguous. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about some points in cosmic root substance being focused on. This is a very broad speculation, but I think there is an analogy to what's happening in material space right now. In certain places in space, gases condense as particles, and then those particles bring to birth a sun. That may be as it appears in physical space as we see it right now. It's an analog to what happened in a deeper spiritual sense in the very beginning of the whole creation. The selection, as we mentioned in an earlier talk, is a reflection of the spirit, the creative spirit itself, knowing itself, and it only picks up as, or enlightens, or chooses, or selects as many loci in cosmic root substance as are reflective of its creative being. Now, our work was the work of taking form, or taking shape, or taking location in being. And that introduces us to a concept that carries throughout the evolutionary creation, and that is the concept of stage. We pass through evolutionary stages. And in each of these stages, there is a definite objective. There are things that we are to come to, and this is why the evolutionary scheme really is a plan. It's a creation, but it's a very scientifically planned creation. It's an evolutionary creation, and there is wisdom in it. There's wisdom to know that if this goes through this, goes through this, the ultimate objective can be attained by attaining a series of objectives in between. And the stage that we were passing through in the Saturn period is called the mineral-like stage of existence. And in the mineral-like stage of existence, we take on form and substance and texture and, above all, various different shapes. That primary or most primal kind of experience that we can think of is what our work was in the Saturn period. So we began really in a beginner state. We began before kindergarten. You know, like, we're just lumps to begin with. But we have to begin somewhere, and creation is extremely fundamental. It brings things right to the most basic focus possible. What happens is, especially you get in university classes, a lot of instructors or professors try to show you how brilliant they are, and they assume that you know this, and they go through all kinds of things, and they're way ahead of you, and you never get it, really, sometimes, because you don't have the very first fundamentals and a step-by-step way that you come to know things. If we compare the minerals or the mineral-like condition that we were in the Saturn period compared to the minerals that we have right now that comprise this blackboard and other things around us, even the air that we breathe is mineral air. When we compare the two, there's much more sophistication at this point. And that's because there have been several creative periods between them and now, and we build on what we learn from previous periods, so that the universal spirit, by the time it's initiating a new evolutionary wave in the Earth period as a mineral kingdom, it can do so with greater sophistication, and it can bring it through experiences of form and shape and substance and such like that in a much more elaborate way. Everything gets better in evolution. That's one of the definitions of evolution. Everything gets better, everything improves, including the evolutionary process itself. All right. Now, when we were given location, we were given focus. But that focus, it was like the general concentration that produced the globes of the Saturn period was such that it was a concentration that was specific also. So that each one of us was brought to a specific focus. And that specific focus in the Rosicrucian cosmo conception is called a germ. It was a germ, you might say, of formal being. That stays with us. That stays with us through all the different stages of evolution that we pass through, and every time that we have an experience of form, and we go through all kinds of forms and formations, that every time we have an experience of that, that stays with that germ. And that germ is what we now call the seed atom of the physical body. Our physical body is an elaboration of what began as a germ, as a position in space. So we've learned quite a great deal, and we've been taken through all kinds of different conditions, and each of those different conditions makes an improvement on the things that were as simple and rudimentary as possible at the very beginning of it all. So that germ was a germ of thought. In fact, that germ in other dimensions becomes other germs that are, so to speak, surround that central germ. And when things get really delineated, as they are in this world, those other seed atoms seem to be located in different spaces, different places in space, in the dense physical body. But in reality, when everything is all lined up and everything comes home, everything is centered, like in between lives, when everything from all the bodies has been condensed, they all come back to that one central germ. Since there were seven revolutions through all seven globes, you can understand that we picked up quite a bit of sophistication along the way. Now, it's very hard to determine time. How long was this period? We don't have anything to reference it according to. The time, as we know, when we get into deeper inner states, time has a very different meaning than it does here. So it's not possible to guess the duration of the Saturn period, and that may even not even be a valid question to ask. But I think that it was probably pretty long. And I base that completely on analogy. I know that in myself, when I'm learning something new and I want to learn it really well, I'm trying to teach myself Spanish, which is a long, slow, hard project. But when I want to get something, I want to get it very fundamentally first, because I find that if I get it and I get it really well, and I get it repeatedly really well, then the sophistications and the rapidity can come later. And I assume that fundamental existence is like that also. For us to get the experience of form, or for us to get the experience of shape, what probably took a long time, and we probably came at it from many, many different angles. Now the statement is that we didn't get it easily. It's stated that some of us resisted. Now, how can we resist if we don't even have a self to resist? So there are things that are way beyond our comprehension that we don't know of. I assume it is because some tried to maintain their consciousness in the blissful state of virgin spirit as it was before being thrown into creation. In fact, to some extent, all of us resisted. But the resistance was not necessarily a bad thing, provided it wasn't overdone. That is one of the values of being mineral-like. It is resistance. It is the quality of resistance that allows us to maintain or to sustain a shape or a form or any kind of existence. That's a resistance. This is the same thing that happens in the world right now in the Earth period. Our minerals resist being changed. And because of that, we can have solid bodies that don't puddle apart and that we don't have to hold together by will to keep them held together all the time, to keep them, you know, to keep the integrity of the body. So the minerals then, by forming resistance, probably were of assistance to the other evolving creatures that needed a mineral-like state of condition for their experience of form in whatever stage of elaboration it was at. This points to something very, very beautiful. It points to the fact that we weren't dead wood. We were serving right from the very beginning. Even in our resistance, even in our only ability to take and hold shape, we were serving. And that was our service. In human beings, we don't think like thinking in the spirit takes place. Everything is whole in the spirit. There's no waste in God anywhere, if you want to use the word God, there's no waste anywhere. Everything is useful, everything is helpful, and everything participates. Nobody wants to sit there and say, well, maybe in a few years you'll be able to participate and help out. All of us participate and help, and all of us have a function ab initio, right from the beginning. And we carry it all the way through. Forms and individual foci don't develop on their own. They have to be brought into being, and they have to be held into being. And that work is done by other creative beings within the universal spirit. The general tone of concentration of the Saturn period may be provided macrocosmically by the universal spirit, but various spirits on various levels within are the concentrators that bring it down to whatever level of depth in manifestation is necessary. That brings up another thing. We're not alone. The creation is not carried out by and for us alone. We are only a very small part, and we're in the lower part of the creation. Beyond us, there are creative beings that are participating in this work of creation that is beautiful and glorious in such a way that to get even a little glimpse of it, we are awed for the rest of our life. And so, it is a shared activity. Everything in the spirit is shared. Now, this ability to bring us a germ, a focal point, that is our center of formal being for all the rest of the creation, was done by a very high group of beings. They're called Lords of the Flame. Eddie has talked several times about them, and he's done a very excellent job of telling us what they were like and what they did for us. There's one quality about them that is very important to something like this. There are various levels and even various grades of spiritual creative hierarchies. And some of those grades of hierarchies are such that they did not need to participate in the evolutionary creation. This means they participated freely. And this means if you don't have anything at stake, you're playing poker and your bread and butter money is on the table, it's very hard to play objectively. But if it's funny money, like Monopoly money or something like that, you can play objectively because you personally don't have anything at stake. And there are some things that you can do when it isn't necessary, when it isn't crucial that you do this and that you need to do this for your own sake. But when you do things from the goodness of your heart, so to speak, and this is on a very grand level, when you do this from the goodness of your heart, you can accomplish and do things that normally cannot be accomplished. And that's why the Lords of Flame did this, why they were capable of this. They had that ability to give us the most fundamental focus of existence, the germ of a separate being, formal being. Later on, when things changed, they returned and they gave us something else. And they gave it from their own being. Both of these things were given from their own being. You know, it's not like something you give something outside of yourself. You give something to yourself. That means something of yourself is given in the activity. As I understand it, what happened is that what was becoming a personality in reflection, what was becoming a spirit, through the experience of resistant form, form that could have duration, that was based on resistance, in unconsciously working and sustaining resistance forms, this awakened the power of will. The power of will is built by countering resistance. And so, in the very last revolution, in the Vulcan revolution of the Saturn period, what happened was that the Lords of Flame returned and they awakened in a dim way the ability, the will to be. So there's two important principles in here. One of them is that in order to awaken a spiritual power, you first must have material experience. And this is really important to us right now, because right now we don't want to endure through various different material conditions. But when we have the experience, it comes clear as a spiritual faculty. It follows from. So that experience precedes spiritual awakening. So all the people who are trying to escape the experience here and suddenly become spiritual are making a grave mistake. They're not using one of the fundamental principles that is within the evolutionary creation. This is a very important thing in the process that is called the spiritualization of matter. The spirit has to give itself to the matter. All right. Another thing that is a principle that we don't have really time to go into is that every material experience is